Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, this is Mac, and you're listening to Mac's Musings. Tonight we're going to be talking to Tony Masiello. It should be dialing him already. And we'll be talking about Natasha Naidi's Boudoir of Blood.
Hello?
Hello, Tony.
Hi, Mac.
How are you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Oh, I'm okay, thanks. Okay,
good.
So I was just getting ready. I was just getting ready to introduce you. Well, I introduced you a little bit, but I wanted to give the people a rough idea of what we're doing tonight. So
cool.
You have your second in-house feature from your shotonvideohorror.com, Natasha Naidi's Boudoir of Blood, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. And for those that aren't familiar with the SOVHorror.com, I am going to let my guest, Tony Masiello, explain that to you. Tell us about your business.
Yeah, so SOV Horror is a DVD label that I started about, I think it's almost 3 years now, going on 3 years ago. We've released about 45-plus films, primarily shot-on-video horror films is what we kind of primarily focus on. And we have put out a couple films. We did put out a 16-millimeter film, and we have another 16-millimeter coming out in the future. But primarily it's a focus on shot-on-video horror films, you know, underappreciated, lost, obscure movies. You know, we're just trying to get out movies that we really like a lot out to audiences to enjoy.
Well, yeah, and anybody listening, you can go to SOVHorror.com and you can grab some of these. They're at reasonable prices, and he also has some other merchandise like T-shirts and cups and stuff like that. Don't you have that kind of stuff there?
Yep, we got shirts, pillows, a whole bunch of fun stuff. And also the website also is just dedicated to shot-on-video movies in general. So we also have reviews on there. There's a couple of different podcasts that we have, videos, making of documentaries, interviews, articles, a whole bunch of stuff. So if people are just interested in shot-on-video horror in general, you know, it's a pretty cool site to get some cool info on some of these films.
Yeah, I agree. I've been to your site quite a few times just to check to see if there's anything new or if you got any deals going on, because you periodically do deals. So tell the people about that.
Yeah, so I like to do deals a lot. Primarily, though, I mainly only advertise those online, so typically on Facebook. I don't always put them on the website per se. So if people are interested in trying to get reduced prices on some of our merchandise and whatnot, I do periodically do like daily deals and stuff like that, and we try to have sales periodically. So if people are kind of interested on keeping up to pulse with that, I recommend following us either on Facebook, either SOVHorror.com, you know, the company, or following me, Tony Masiello, on Facebook, so you can kind of see when we're having those deals.
So now this Natasha Naidi's Boudoir of Blood, now this is the second one. The first one was the Zombarella's House of Horrors, which we did the last time you were on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, it has a host like the last one does, because it's done in the same format with the late night talk show host thing where they show movies and then they have made up commercials and made up trailers and things like that. But it's a completely new hostess. So tell us about her, and were you the one that came up with the idea of this particular host?
Yeah, so after we did the first film, Zombarella, it was a lot of fun and people seemed to like it a lot. And so I knew I wanted to produce a sequel, but I wanted to do something a little different. You know, I thought, like, how can I make this kind of different than the first film? And so one of the things I came up with an idea of is, at least to me, I thought it was funny at the time. I don't know how funny it really is. But I thought, like, wouldn't it be funny if we had a different host this time but they're playing the sequel to the movie that was played in the first movie. So it's a movie within a movie. As you kind of explained, it's a horror host hosting a movie. So the joke in my brain was like, what if each time I make one of these, we have a new horror hostess to kind of keep it fresh and interesting? And the actress who plays Natasha Knighty, me and her actually go really way back. We've been friends, gosh, I don't know, for almost probably 20 years. Quite a long time. She was actually a neighbor. Her name is Ramelli. She's an actress, special effects artist, burlesque dancer, very talented individual. And we had met years ago. She was actually the sister of a good friend of mine. And they kind of all lived in the same little cul-de-sac, and we both had a mutual love for horror films and kind of hit it off immediately and became fast friends. And she was producing – well, actually, she didn't – sorry, let me back up a little bit. So we were kind of talking, and I told her I made movies and stuff, and she had expressed interest in making her own film. And so she was kind of inspired by watching me doing my stuff because I was already making short films and stuff like that, and she started to help me out with them to make her own movie. So she did make a movie called Purveyors of Blood, which we actually distribute at SOV Horror. And it's a complete bonkers cannibal vampire movie. It's a ton of fun. Her and her then husband did like all the special effects. I mean, they pretty much did everything themselves. You know, I helped out a little bit. I actually had a small role in the film, which was fun. So, you know, we go way back, and when I knew I needed a new host for this one, and I was like, hey, you know, I should hit up Ramelli. She would be great for this, and she was super excited to do it, and, you know, it was a lot of fun working with her again on this one.
Now, when you thought of her, did you think of the person first? By person, I mean the character. Did you think of the character first and then think of her? Or did you think of your friend and then think, you know what, I want her to be a hostess? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so really it was kind of one of those things where, you know, the actress who played the host in the first movie, we really weren't working together anymore, so we definitely needed a new host. And it was one of those things where I was like, okay, I need a new host, but what can I do different, you know? And in Zombarella, you know, every kind of horror host has their kind of shtick that they do, you know?
Right.
And Zombarella, her shtick was she had large breasts and she would bounce them. So anytime there was a joke or something like that, we'd get a up-close shot of her cleavage bouncing, and that was kind of her gimmick, her joke. And so with the new host, I knew I needed to do something different. And I immediately thought of Ramelli because, you know, she, like I said, she's a good friend. We had worked together many times. And I'm like, she would be great at this. And I remembered that she was a burlesque dancer. And so she did burlesque here locally in San Diego and actually used to run her own troupe out here. Very talented, her and her team. And so I was like, well, why don't we do the world's first stripping horror hostess? I'd never heard of anything like that before. And I was like, that could be a fun kind of different thing. And it was also a way that we could shoehorn some nudity into the film because the shorts in the film do not have any nudity. They do have some, you know, excessive gore and stuff like that that the fans want. But typically fans also want nudity in these types of films. So one thing we did try to do a little different, which I thought was kind of funny, was, you know, normally you would see nudity in the films but not in the host segments. And I said, screw it. Why don't we put nudity in the host segments in the commercials since it's not in the film proper? So,
yeah.
And, you know, and she was totally game for all that. I mean, she you know, I think we – I probably bought one of the outfits, but most of the stuff she kind of already had. And, you know, this time I wanted to make the character a little more kind of like Rhonda Shear from USA Up All Night, which that show was extremely influential to me as a young kid. And that's really kind of what we even originally, even with the first film, we were really trying to go for like a USA Up All Night type vibe. That's why there's like the overabundance of 1-900-SEX ads and stuff like that. So we were really trying to go for that vibe. And so Romelli was just, she was just great. She got the Rhonda Shear thing really fast and, you know, kind of did it her own spin, though. You know, I didn't want her to just play Rhonda Shear, you know. I wanted her to do her own thing, and she definitely did. You know, she definitely put herself into the character.
Yeah, she did a good job.
Yeah.
Now, just out of curiosity, and it doesn't really matter what your answer is because it's like a matter of your opinion. Out of all mm-hmm. the commercials, the made-up commercials that you had, excluding the trailers, because that's a separate question because I want to know the answer to that too. But of the commercials, which one was your favorite that was included in the film?
Oh, gosh, it's so hard because, you know, I really loved almost all of them. Actually, I loved all of them. Not almost. I loved all of them. I thought they were all great. And one thing we did different with this one, too. So the first film, Zombrella's House of Horrors, was pretty much made by myself and Tim Ritter. So I directed two of the shorts. Tim directed one of the shorts. And then we both did fake commercials for it. And then with this mm-hmm. one, I wanted to try something different. I thought it'd be cool to bring in some other filmmakers and give some new filmmakers a chance to kind of be part of, you know, the project. I thought bringing some fresh blood into the project could be really, you know, good for the commercial breaks. And so, you know, we had so many great people. It's so hard to really pick a favorite. I mean, I guess one that really stands out to me, and it's actually a throwback to the Zombarella film, is the Datamate ad featuring Eugene, which is played by Tim Ritter. And he played that same character in the Zombarella movie, and so I thought it would be really fun. He was kind of busy at the time. We wanted to have him a little more involved with the sequel, but he's a real busy guy. He's working on tons of stuff. And so I'm like, Tim, is there any way you can play Eugene again for this? You know, who he's kind of like this metalhead type guy that no woman would ever want to date. You know, creepy metalhead guy. And Tim played it so great. I mean, he had me in stitches. So that's probably one of my favorites. But I loved them all. And I'm happy to report Tim will be coming back in the next film, hopefully, as well. I was just talking to him about that the other day. So.
Oh, cool. Cool, because I love him. He's great.
Oh, he's so
great. So what about the trailers? Do you have you may not have a favorite of those either, but do you have a favorite of the made-up trailers?
Yeah, the trailers. So let's see, which ones did we have in there? We had the Demon Pimp trailer, Sylvan Smooky Demon Pimp. That one was a lot of fun. I think that one's pretty early in the movie. We put that one, I think, in the very first commercial break. And that one for sure was one of my favorites. That one was done by he's primarily known as an author. His name is Derek Slayton, and that was kind of an old short film. I believe it was maybe even incomplete that he had shot in the 90s, you know. And so he had submitted that to me, and I absolutely loved it, and I put that in there. But a few of the other ones, I mean, one of my other favorites, and it's just because I'm in it, and I remembered shooting this scene, you know, when I was just still a teenager, was, I think it's called, gosh, is it called Cannibal Birthday Party, I think it's called. And in that one, I have a little cameo. I play the cannibal who's feasting at his birthday party on a bunch of guts and stuff like that. And I remember that really distinctly because that was like when I was first trying to do special effects. And so I got all this real gross stuff and like threw it in a bowl, and I think there was some raw meat in there. Like, I don't even know what I was chewing. I was a stupid teenager. But so in that scene, I'm actually chewing some real grossness in there. It was pretty nasty. And I think when we stopped, you know, I pretty much probably vomited or something.
I'm not laughing because you vomited. I was just laughing because you were laughing.
For sure.
So tell us about the short, The Green-Eyed Monster.
Yeah, so Green-Eyed Monster. So one of the things that was a little different with this one is I wanted to use real vintage shot-on-video shorts. So opposed to,
you know, asking filmmakers to produce new shorts that are kind of retro in style, I thought, what if we actually use retro old shorts that really haven't seen much of a life a day, you know, that haven't really been released, people haven't really seen them.
And so I had met the filmmaker Jeff Kirkendall. A lot of people might be familiar with him from his work with the Polonia brothers. He's acted in a lot of their movies and stuff like that. And Jeff's a great guy. And I was just kind of talking to Jeff, and we were actually talking about distributing some of his films and stuff. And, you know, he sent me a bunch of his shorts, and I saw Green-Eyed Monster, and I was like, this is so fun. It's pretty much, I guess the story focuses on I believe it's Halloween night, and there's a girl who suspects that her boyfriend is cheating on her, and all of a sudden her radio starts talking to her and is kind of tempting her, hey, I'll kind of show you what's going on. For people who aren't familiar, Green-Eyed Monster means jealousy. It's kind of an old saying, you know, it's not used as much these days, but that's kind of an old saying people used to use, the Green-Eyed Monster, which is jealousy. So that's kind of like the theme of that short. And I just thought it was really cool, you know, it was shot in the 90s, you know, I don't know the exact year off the top of my head, but I believe it was like the mid to late 90s. And I just thought it was a really fun short and would be, you know, when you're putting these things together, you try to pace the film, you know, so you want to make sure that, you know, you're kind of not giving away all the, like, crazy effects stuff at the beginning and stuff like that. I wanted to save the more effects-heavy short for the end. So I thought start it with the more subtle shorts, like Green-Eyed Monster. And, I loved Green-Eyed Monster, and I thought it came out really good. And so far we've heard some really good feedback on it, which is awesome.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, well, you do good work. So, because I've heard from some people about Zombarella, they watched it just because they heard about it on the show, and then they watched it, and then they really liked it. And so then they wanted to know if you had any more like that, and then I had mentioned this one, you know, Natasha Nighty, and so mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll watch it or not, but they did show some interest at least. So.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
So, tell us about another one that's in there called Typeface.
Yeah, so Typeface is a short I directed, and I originally, that's one of my first kind of real narrative shorts I made. Previous to that, I was mainly shooting stop animation and like special effects gore footage type tests and stuff like that. And Typeface was like the first attempt I had at actually kind of making a real narrative, you know, short. And let's see, gosh, we shot that, I believe, it was either the late 90s or the very early 2000s, you know, it was many years ago now, it's hard to remember all the details. But, you know, the way that really came about was my grandfather had owned some houses, and he had passed, and we had to sell the houses, and so I had this empty house that I could shoot in, and you know, for anyone who's a filmmaker, I mean, you know, that's like a dream come true, is having an empty house to shoot in, and so I have this empty house location, and I'm like, well, what can I do, you know? And at the time, I was watching a ton of Roger Corman movies, you know, I've always been a big Corman fan, but during that time specifically, I was, like, obsessed with Roger Corman movies. So I'm like, I want to make something that's kind of in the vein of, like, a Roger Corman movie from the 60s, something like a Little Shop of Horrors or Bucket of Blood type film. And so I came up with this idea of a writer who, you know, this minimalist writer who kind of moves to this house that still has some junk left in it, and he finds this old typewriter that happens to be possessed. So, and the typewriter will help him write his book as long as he feeds it blood, you know, and part of the joke is when he feeds it, you know, the typewriter kind of orgasms, so it's like moaning and groaning and stuff like that. And And so we originally shot this short in that first location I mentioned, my grandfather's old place. But what happened was, long story short, it wasn't very good. And we didn't quite finish shooting it. So like 3 or 4 months later, I scored a new location. It happened to one of my friends had some properties and someone had moved out, and I made a deal if I helped them clean up the property that I could shoot there. And so the movie actually does feature footage from that first shoot, but the second shoot as well. But long story short, I mean, this movie goes way back, and this new cut that's in this specific, you know, Natasha Nighty's Boudoir Blood, it's a brand new cut of the short that I made recently. I had an amazing composer named Robert Mullis, who wrote a complete original score for it. He literally scored the movie for me. And, I mean, I feel he completely nailed what I was trying to go for atmosphere-wise. You know, we worked really closely on that. And, yeah, I mean, I'm very happy with the new cut of the movie. I mean, it's kind of funny to, you know, be retooling something that you shot, you know, when you were pretty much a teenager, and then re-releasing it all these years later, you know. You get a little scared because maybe a shot might be out of focus or something like that. And I try to fix that kind of stuff as much as I could, you know. But overall, I mean, I really like this short. I think it's a lot of fun. I think people have fun with it. So, and I guess a bit of trivia, too, a funny bit of trivia, is the typewriter's voice is actually done by the actress who plays Natasha Nighty. And so that's how far me and her go back. Like I said, we go very far back. And she also plays the role of Judy in the movie. So, I mean, she looks a little different back then, you know, because it's like 20 years earlier. But, yeah, it's actually the same actress. She kind of makes a little joke about it in her host segment, you know. I think she says something along the lines, "Ooh, I really liked her outfit." Like, that Judy girl's cute, and I really liked her outfit, which she's referring to herself. So.
I like when movies or TV shows do stuff like that, like to get
for sure.
to get off the subject of your movie for just a minute. One of the funniest things that I saw on TV, now you know how sometimes when they want to get rid of a character, they just get rid of the character. Sometimes mm-hmm. they kill them off, and then sometimes, like with Chuck on Happy Days, they just pretend like he never existed. So,
right.
But sometimes they'll bring in a new person to play the same character. And it's usually like a what? To the fans, they're like, what?
Right.
Because there's no warning or anything. So I don't know if you ever watched this show called My Wife and Kids.
No, I haven't seen that one.
it was a hilarious show. It was Damon Wayans played the father of the family.
Cool.
Yeah, he's hilarious. But their oldest daughter had been played by one actress, and then they had gotten a new actress, but the way they introduced the actress was she was coming down the stairs and she fell, and so she's like tumbling down the stairs, and when she gets up, you see it's a completely different actress. And she says, "Oh, I don't feel like myself today."
Nice.
And the way she did it, of course, just me saying it isn't quite as funny as seeing it. Because when it was done, it was like, we laughed uproariously at that. So it's the same nice. Kind of deal of what you were talking about is what made me think of it.
Nice, cool.
So getting off of my story now, tell us about another one that's in there called The Road.
Yeah, so The Road was directed by Ron Ford, who's another filmmaker we've worked with a label. We actually just released one of my favorite movies by him called The Crawling Brain just this month.
Mm.
We have another one actually from him coming out next month called Dead Season, which is my favorite movie by him. But anyways, Ron is another guy, you know, I've been a huge fan of Ron since the early 2000s when I first discovered his work. And, I mean, he's a great filmmaker, great writer, great actor. A lot of people would probably notice him if they were fans of direct-to-video, you know,
mini TV type features from the early 2000s. And, you know, I asked Ron if he had anything that could maybe work for this, and he offered up The Road. And The Road is just such a cool short. It's pretty much, I don't want to give too much away, but it's pretty much about kind of like a cursed road that is inhabited by the dead who have died on the road. So it's a zombie short. So there's zombies, including a dog zombie, which is just the coolest the coolest thing in it. I absolutely love the little dog zombie. He's so cute. And I mean, it's really fun. It's pretty gory, you know, for people who like gore. That's why we kind of, you know, put that one last, like I was kind of alluding to earlier, kind of saving the goriness for the end of the film. And, yeah, I mean, Ron and his team, I mean, you know, I don't know if you've had Ron on your show yet, Mac, but
yes,
Ron's just such a... Oh, nice. I think you've had all... Yeah, everyone involved with this movie pretty much on your show. And Ron, just a great guy and such a great filmmaker. And I highly urge people, like, regardless if you check out my movie, you know, regardless if you check out Natasha Knighty, check out some Ron Ford movies because they're so great. He's such a talented filmmaker. And it was really great getting to, you know, get to have him involved with this one.
Yeah, he is. I really enjoyed having him on the show and Jeff too. And another person that's in there, Rebecca Reinhardt. I've had her. Well, mm-hmm. I also had Tim Ritter too.
Yeah, and you've had Madeline Deering as well. She did a commercial in it.
Yeah, she's been on the show, and she's kind of planning on coming back, so that should be interesting.
Oh, great. Well, I'll go in and drop a spoiler. She's actually did direct a short for the next sequel, which is currently in production. So, expect a short from Madeline Deering in that one.
Oh, so you mean like the third one, Zombarella, Natasha, and then now a third one?
Yeah, so we're currently in production on the third one. Almost all the shorts are done. I'm just waiting on one more, but that one's pretty much done and shot. It's just being scored right now. And then we're off to making the commercials, and hopefully that should be out sometime, I'm hoping early next year.
I'll be looking
forward
to it.
Yeah, and I guess I'll go ahead and spill the beans. We actually have four directors involved in that one, so we're going to have four shorts this time around. And we got Joe Sherlock, who a lot of people might know from his films. He's done a million movies and such a great filmmaker. We got Madeline Deering, like we mentioned. We also have Ron Ford coming back, which is awesome. And another young filmmaker named Joseph Boghelli, who directed an awesome slasher movie called Specimen 6. We did a limited release of that movie a while back, and was really excited to have him on board on this one, too. So a really awesome team. I can't wait for people to see this next sequel. I've seen pretty much all the shorts now, and they're just a blast. It's going to be a fun movie.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Going to have a lot of cool people on it, involved in it. Wow. Okay, so what else did I want to ask you? Not anything specific about the films themselves, unless you had something else that you wanted to say about them, because I don't want to presume that you were done. Did you have anything else?
I think we've covered the shorts pretty well. I don't want to spoil them too much, you know. I urge anyone who sounded, if you're intrigued by what you heard, you know, run over to SOVHorror.com and pick up the movie. It's pretty cheap, you know, I think people really dig the shorts as well as the commercials. And like you said, we had a ton of great people involved with the commercials, like, Rebecca Reinhardt, you know, Tim Ritter, Derek Sladen, John Hoden, Max Hatcher, I mean, Dylan Fawn Harvey, Mel Heflin, I mean, Sean C. Phillips. I mean, if you're into indie cinema, you probably know most of these people. So, you know, a lot of really great people, you know, were involved, and I can't thank them all enough for their contributions to the feature.
Okay, well, the next thing that I was going to ask you about, and it may seem like a strange question, but getting into your special features. So for those listening, he includes special features on this film. So be looking for those, too, when you get your copy of Natasha Nighty's Boudoir Blood. So the audio commentary, excuse me, do you do those because you like to do them, or do you do them because you know the fans like them, or is it a combination of the two?
So I put them on disc. I mean, you know, I'm a fan first and foremost. I mean, this label was really started as a labor of love to kind of pay back tribute to shot on video movies, because those inspired me to even get into the film industry. And I've been working professionally in the industry now for 20 years. And, you know, so it was, the label's kind of, it's always been, I take it from a fan's perspective. And I always like to say I consider us the criterion of shot on video horror. So I try to put together as many special features as I can. And I know fans love commentaries. I love commentaries. Me personally, I don't enjoy doing commentaries because sometimes they just feel kind of weird, you know, commenting on my own work like that. But obviously people like that. People like it, and I know sometimes maybe there's, you know, some interesting tidbits or stories I could share. But obviously, you know, sometimes I get a little self-conscious doing something like a commentary because you're like, this is going to live forever, you know? But we always try to do commentaries on our releases. And it was kind of interesting because this one, you know, because there was three filmmakers, you know, we obviously, people spoke over their own shorts. So, you know, when Jeff Kirkendall's segment is playing, he's talking about that. When Ron Ford's is playing, he's talking about it. And when my stuff is playing, I'm speaking about that. So it's one of those kind of mixed commentary tracks with a bunch of different speakers, which I think is kind of fun, you know? Just like the feature, it's kind of a variety of voices and talent, you know?
Well, yeah, and it makes sense because the one director directed one film, and so why would their voice be on the other one unless they had something to do with it, you know?
Exactly.
But, I see what you're saying, of course. So now you have a bonus short on there called Night Therapy, and without giving anything away, just like a little teaser for anybody that might be listening.
Yeah, Night Therapy. That's a Jeff Kirkendall short, and it's kind of about a lady and her therapist. I'll be honest, I don't want to really say too much about it because I feel I probably would give it away. But it's another short by Jeff Kirkendall, and it's a pretty lengthy short. I think it's almost a half an hour long. So, like I said, we try to load these releases as much as we can, you know, and push the maximum amount of stuff we can put on the disc without, you know, obviously having to encode it at a low bit rate. We always want to make sure the features and everything look really nice. So, it's a pretty cool half an hour short from Jeff Kirkendall, you know, so, you know, if people dig the Green Eyed Monster or any of his other work, I think they'll really like Night Therapy as well.
Oh, yeah, they probably would. So, now, I'm going to mention some of these other features that's on here, and then you can say whatever you want about them or not say anything about them if you don't want to. But for anybody listening, there are some other special features, like there's bonus commercials, there's a Kubert-style segment, and there's a Natasha Nighty's credit dance that's uncut. And then you also get an insert card with your film of the hostess, Natasha. Mm-hmm. And there's also the trailer vault for SOVhorror.com. So do you want to say anything about any of those?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, with the bonus commercials, you know, when we made the first film, the Zombarella film, you know, that was kind of a kitchen sink movie. I was trying to pretty much throw just about everything I'd made into one movie. And so we had made a bunch of fake trailers and stuff like that. But the commercial breaks, you know, the feedback I got was the commercial breaks were a little too long. People didn't like how long the commercial breaks were. So
So with the sequel, Natasha 90, you know, we tried to remedy that, and we tried to keep the commercials a lot shorter and keep the breaks shorter. So I had a ton of talented people send me commercials, but, you know, when it came down to actually putting the feature together, you know, we just didn't have the runtime, you know. We wanted to keep it a nice, tight runtime, you know, so right. We didn't want it to be the feature to be too long. So we did have to cut a few of the commercials from the feature itself and insert those, you know, into the bonus features. And I think there's a good, like, I think there's probably like four or five in there. And there's some really good stuff in there. You know, I always hate, you know, having to cut anything out of a movie. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is about making the most, you know, solid movie you can make. And I mean, those other commercials are great. No, you know, disrespect to those at all, because they're a lot of fun and I recommend people check them out. But, you know, it was like, you only have so many spots for commercials. Okay, we got to really choose which ones we think are going to fit that segment the best. And, you know, so that's what we did. The Qbert Style segment is, the Qbert Style is what we did was that's a fake movie reviewer show that one of the commercials is, and that's played by Sean C. Phillips, a.k.a. Cool Duder for YouTube fans. And he's kind of playing like a fake Roger Ebert type character, you know, who hates horror movies and hates all that. And when I first talked to Sean about doing that, he just did this, I kind of sent him a script to follow, and Sean just did his own thing, so he sent me this thing, and it was hilarious. I mean, I absolutely loved it. It was great, but it was way too long. It was like 3 minutes long or something, and so I had to go back to Sean and say, hey, you know, look, can we get this down? I want to keep these at 30 seconds, so, you know, here's the revised script. Can we, you know, do that? And so the uncut one, the first one he sent me, I cut together still, and that's what we threw on the disc as kind of a little bonus, because it's pretty funny. I thought he was really funny in that role. The Natasha Dottie credit dance, so that was, you know, the whole thing is she's a horror hostess who takes off her clothes. The more of the movie you watch, the more clothing she takes off. And obviously by the end of the movie, she's getting completely nude is the thing. And so the credits of the movie actually play over her final dance where she's getting nude. And so, you know, I just thought it'd be fun, you know, to just, hey, you know, I put it this way. I know lots of perverts. And, you know, I knew some of our fans and some of these people, they're not going to appreciate that I have the credits going over Romelli's awesome dance. So I figured, why don't we just throw the dance on there without, you know, the credits, so people can enjoy that how they will. And pretty much same with the insert card. You know, we always try to put some kind of insert card or, you know, even alternate artwork on inside our DVDs. Like I said, we always tend to do really top-notch kind of releases. And so with this one, I thought it'd be really fun to put, like, an insert card with a nice, cute picture of Natasha. So, you know, if we're ever doing cons or anything like that, she can sign those for fans and stuff. So that's why we put the card in there. And trailer reel, I mean, we always throw trailer reels in there. Like I said, we put out, in December, we'll put out our 45th release. I really still can't believe it's been 45 already. Wow. But we're putting out our 45th release, and so every disc I always try to load up with trailers. You know, we usually pick 7 to 8 trailers that we think kind of go with the theme of whatever that movie is. So, you know, and we also sell a trailer DVD as well. So if people are fans of, like, trailer discs, I know I'm a huge fan of movie trailers. I mean, if I have a party or something, that's, like, my first go-to is, like, throw some movie trailers on the TV, you know, put some music on and grab some beers, you know. And so we do sell a trailer disc. It's about an hour of trailers from our films, so people can kind of sample what's in the catalog. And, yeah, check out kind of a wide variety of what we have to offer at SOVHorror.com.
Yeah, I had gotten a copy of that myself. And, nice. Yeah, well, and of course I watched it. And then I had given my brother, he takes a long time to make up his mind, though, so whatever. But anyway, I gave him a list of all the movies that were available at that time anyway. Now the list is a little bit different. But I also let him at least borrow my trailer DVD. Hopefully he gives it back. He hasn't given it back yet. Well, but what he has said so far, because he was watching the trailers, and he said, now, and this is in no way a bad thing, because it's not like you're not aware that you make low-budget films.
Sure, of course, yeah.
But, and there's nothing bad about that. It's not a bad word. I don't know why people get that idea in their heads that just because something's low budget that it's not any good, which isn't true. Some of the best movies that I have seen are really, really, really low budget movies.
Agreed.
Or no budget movies even.
They can
be really, really great. But he said, you know what, as long as they have a good storyline and they're interesting and or they're funny or they got something that's enjoyable to it, I don't care. I just watch them to be entertained.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about.
And that's the way I
feel. End of the day.
Yeah.
You know, and anyone who takes a movie like, say, the Dingleberries too serious anyway, you know, I mean, like you said, we put out some pretty silly movies, you know, and some of them are serious, some of them are silly. I mean, we have a wide variety of movies. I mean, so you know, I'm never offended if someone, you know, even, you know, says a movie's shitty, so to speak. You know, I've had people tell me, oh, that movie sucks, but I like that one. You know, art is so subjective of what people like and what they don't like. But I will say, like, my main thing as a producer and as a distributor is I only want to put out movies that I like. So at the end of the day, like, you know, I can really sleep at night knowing, like, hey, I think it's a great movie. And, you know, like I said, art is subjective. Whether someone else likes it or not, you know, it's completely up to them. But at the end of the day, I can sleep well because I'm like, well, I put out movies I like, you know. I'm not putting out movies just to make money, you know, because, you know, I do this business all on my own. I don't know, you know, a lot of people probably don't know that, but, like, I'm pretty much a one-man operation. So it's like when you're working on a movie for sometimes 3 months to a year, I mean, that's how long some of these releases take. I've literally worked on some of them for over a year. I still have one right now I've been working on for a very long time. But, like, you know, it's like if you're going to work on something for that long, you really have to have a love for that film because, you know, you're going to be watching it 500 times. You're going to be, you know, cutting the trailers and the making of documentaries. And, you know, there's always some type of problem here and there. So you end up watching these movies, you know, 500-600 times, I swear. So you really do have to love, you know, what it is, you know, and so... But we have a wide variety. Yeah, I have no problems with people saying our movies suck or they're shitty or they're, you know, good, bad. I mean, hopefully at the end of the day, I hope people enjoy them. But, you know, some people like movies because they think they're bad. You know what I mean? It's the whole so bad it's good kind of connotation. And I'm totally cool with that. If people like it because they think it's crappy, that's great too. I mean, at the end of the day, my thought is like a movie's only bad if it's boring. If you're entertained, then, you know, it's a good movie.
Well, exactly, and that's kind of like what my brother was saying, and, well, actually, mm-hmm. he has said that, as long as I'm not bored, and that's my main thing. I hate being bored. That's why it's really hard for me to start any drama, because most mm-hmm. dramas are boring.
Yeah, slow, yeah.
And that's the cardinal sin to me, is being bored. Mm-hmm. And then, like a comedy, that's the second one that I try to avoid unless I like the people that are doing the comedy, and then sometimes I'm still disappointed. But the purpose of a comedy is to be funny, which means I should laugh, and I'm extremely easy to make laugh. I'm extremely easy to make laugh, and I'm extremely easy to make cry. And so if your movie is supposed to be funny and I'm not laughing, there's something wrong with it. if it's supposed to be sad and I don't even shed one tiny little tear, there's something wrong with it. It's not sad if I'm not crying. Because I cry at commercials. I mean, and I'm not even talking about like belly laugh where, oh, I have to grab my belly because it's hurting because I'm laughing so hard. It doesn't have to be that kind of comedy. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, where I laugh a couple of times.
Sure.
But this one that I kind of like, I shouldn't say I put it off, but I thought, I don't know if I want to watch it, but I'll watch it. It was Marlon Wayans, because I knew it was a Wayans. I had to think, which Wayans was that, because there's so many of them. It was Marlon Wayans, and he did this film called Naked. Have you seen that?
I have not, no.
Okay, well, it's one that you might want to watch. So, I mean, it's very tastefully done. You know, not that I would mind seeing his naked body and you know, in the full Monty, but it's very tastefully done. But he's going to get married. And so he goes out and he gets all drunk and everything. And then the church bell rings and he wakes up in an elevator completely naked. Then he proceeds to go out and try to find some clothes to wear. So he's running down the street naked. Then he gets in trouble, of course, with the police because he's running down the street naked. And it's done like some other movies that are that kind of one, only instead of like in, excuse me, I can't think of the name of it right now because I have a little bit of a headache and I can't think straight when I have a headache. But it's one of those ones where it's like a time travel, only not travel exactly, but he only relives 1 hour, not like a whole day. He only relives 1 hour. So he goes 1 hour. And then the church bell rings, and then he's back on the floor of the elevator naked. And then each time he learns something, like in the other films that are done that way. Mm-hmm. And so he learns things, and he even helps this one really famous singer to write a song because he meets him in the in a park or something. And it's just so funny because it's him running around naked. It's like, okay, you haven't learned anything yet? After all that, you still keep doing the same things over and over and over. That's why you're reliving it. And, of course, that's the mm-hmm. whole purpose of the movie, though, so that he can learn from his mistakes. And I won't give away the ending, of course, but it's really, really funny. I laughed from almost beginning to end. And I just laughed and laughed to where I actually did make my stomach hurt because I was laughing so hard and so long. It just was hilarious. And I don't expect all comedies I watch to be that funny. But as long as you make me laugh a couple times, I'm good with it.
Sure.
But dramas, that's really hard. So horrors are a good go-to because even if they're kind of on the boring side or they're kind of dumb or something, you got something to look at. You got like gore and, you know, guts and stuff. You got something. And if you're a guy, you have more to look at because they tend to put female nudity. But there are some. Mm-hmm. That put male nudity that give us and so that also gives me something. Well, anybody watching gives us gives us something to look at too, and so just put some stuff in there that at least makes it interesting. But speaking as a critic, reviewer, whatever you want to call them, semi-professional. And you know this because we've talked before, but I always usually can. There's only been two movies since I started doing reviews, and I've been doing them since I was a teenager, that I wasn't able to find one good thing that I could say about it. There's only been two movies in that whole time. Because I can usually find at least one thing that is good about it, that I think is good. And then I go from there and I say, well, you know, there's really good location shots. Like this one movie, I really didn't like it. And it was, to me, it was dumb. It didn't have a good plot. The acting was, you know, mediocre. But I didn't say all that in my review. I said that it has really good location shots, and then it had some famous people in there, even though that to me it sounded like they were reading it off of a teleprompter. I didn't say that. I just mentioned their names and said, if you like these people, watch this film. So I don't know why some critics and reviewers feel the need to like disparage movies when they write a review. To me, that just says that you don't like movies.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunately become a trend with lots of reviewers these days, you know, in this internet world, to just kind of tear apart movies. And, you know, I call it the angry video game nerd syndrome. He's kind of one of the first guys who was kind of doing these overtly critical, you know, comedy, even though it's a comedy bit, he's overtly critical, you know, reviews of films. And you've seen a proliferation of that with, you know, YouTube kind of coming into its own and everyone trying to have their own, you know, 15 minutes of fame, so to speak. And, you know, it's really sad. I think it's kind of like you said, when I watch a movie too, it's like, I think sometimes some people go into some movies, especially low-budget and no-budget films, and they go into them already wanting to make fun of the movie and talk shit about the movie, excuse my language there.
Yeah.
But, you know, they go in with the, in a sense, a bad attitude, you know. In my opinion, you should never go into a movie like, hey, this is going to suck, let's watch it, you know. It's like, well, no, you should want to watch it. And even if your idea of, you know, I'll give you a great example. So, like, me and my wife, you know, my wife loves Disney films. It's the complete opposite of me. I like horror and exploitation movies. Those are, like, you know, my genres. And 80s TNA movies. Those are, like, the movies I like. But we watch movies together, and, you know, I'll watch her movies, and she'll watch mine. And it's so funny because, you know, every time I absolutely love a movie, she hates it. And almost vice versa. Every time she absolutely loves a movie, I hate it. You know? But it's like, neither of us are going there afterwards and saying, oh, my God, you wasted 2 hours of my life making me watch this terrible film or whatever. You know, it's like it's art is just so subjective. And it's kind of like I've even learned at this point, you know, like I said, being in this relationship, it's like if I really love a movie, I know my wife's going to hate it. And it's just because our sense of humors are so different, you know. But opposites attract, and I mean, we're you know, I love that woman. And it's fine that we like different stuff because we can still share it together and we can still be open-minded about it and not, you know, rude about it. And, you know, so I mean, a lot of movies I like, a lot of people would say are terrible films. I mean, I've had tons of people tell me, oh, how do you like that movie, Tony? And it's entertaining. And at the end of the day, like we said earlier, it's like, as long as you get something out of it and you're entertained for that hour and a half, regardless if the acting is good or there's bad production values or whatever, you know, could be the easy complaint about a low-budget film, you know, as long as you're entertained for that 2 hours and you had a good time, that's what matters. You know, you can spend – I think it's even worse when you spend millions of dollars on a movie and then it sucks and no one likes it. I mean, because those people spend millions of dollars, you know what I mean, versus the low-budget guys. Hey, maybe they only spent $5,000. But the difference, though, is in the low-budget world, those movies typically – not always, but typically are made by people who have big heart. You know, they make these movies because they really want to make a good movie. You know, I get there's some people want to make bad movies, but for the most part, you're not going to make a movie and put your own time and money and effort into it, you know, and heart and soul into it, unless it's something you really believe in and want to make. So I think it's never cool to just, you know, easily just dismiss someone's film as shit or something like that, you know? It's like you should always, like, try to be open, like you said, and even if there's, like, you know, try to find the positives if you can, because someone really did, you know, put their heart and soul into it. Because the worst thing to me, I mean, I'm friends with a ton of shot on video filmmakers, and some of my friends have gotten death threats for movies they've made, and I'm not even kidding. They've literally gotten death threats, and they've literally, you know, and imagine how that feels. I mean, you pour your heart and soul into something, and then 20 years later, some punk on the internet's like, you should fucking die, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, whoa, you know, like, it's just a movie. You can turn it off if you don't like it, you know? So.
Yeah, I don't know about some people. Well, people are just nuts most of the time. But let me tell you about one thing. It's short, but I used to, in the 90s, I worked at a video store, and I won't use the name because I'm still under NDA, so I can't say the name. But I worked in this video store, and I was the manager. Well, I started out on the lower end, but then I became the manager, like, within 3 months. And somebody came in. This was when Edward Scissorhands first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
People were coming in, of course, and renting it like crazy. And so we had something like 50 copies of it, and they were always all
mm-hmm.
gone. And so we would have our
right.
little list. People would get put on the list, and then they could get it before other people, but only if they were in the store. You couldn't call in and say, hold this movie for me, because, no, I'm not going to hold a movie for you when you're at home, when there's people
mm-hmm.
that are standing here waiting. So one time somebody had waited for the movie in the store. They were on the list, and they finally got it. Then they went home, and they watched it, and they came back, and they were yelling at me, you know, like, well, first of all, I'm not even the one that made the movie. You know, so what are you yelling at me for? So they were yelling about the movie, how it didn't make any sense, and it was silly. And so, of course, you know, I from working there and actually – having other jobs, I knew how to handle that without being, you
mm-hmm.
know, nasty or anything. I said, well, when you consider the name of the film is Edward Scissorhands, and it's about a guy that has scissors for hands, you should have known it was going to be a silly film.
Yeah, it's not going to
be
silly. It's
about a guy
continue.
With scissors for hands.
Sure.
But yeah, but she wasn't the only one. There were lots of people that complained about it. That didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
A guy can't have scissors for hands. Yeah, that's the whole point.
I always laugh at
well,
that
I'm
stuff.
Sorry.
It's like you watch movies because it's
a lot of your. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say I always laugh at when people take movies that serious. It's like you get movies are fictional that it's you're supposed to suspend your disbelief. I mean, that's one of those other
right.
things you see people. When they overly critique films, well, how could that happen? Or how that wouldn't happen in real life? And it's like, well, it's a movie, folks. It's not real. It's horror. Do you really think someone can come back from the dead and start murdering people? Of course not. Don't take your horror you know, especially when people take horror films serious like that. Like, I get if you're watching a period piece or something, you know? So, like, this is supposed to take place, like, in the 1500s. Like, sure, I want it to be kind of accurate. But you're watching a horror movie or exploitation movie? Come on, man. I mean, the genre is built on unrealistic, you know, premises, so.
Yeah, we've only got, like, a little bit over a minute, but I just wanted to quickly say I've heard arguments between people about Freddy and Jason, because
mm-hmm.
you know how they had the Freddy versus Jason.
Uh-huh.
And so they were all in a thing about, well, Jason won because he was carrying Freddy's head. Yeah, but Freddy's not really alive. He lives in dreams. So he's still alive because he winks at the end. It's like, and besides, it's a movie.
It's just a movie, folks. At the end of the day.
Yeah. Okay, so from all this nice time we were having, we're down to like 45 seconds. So anything that you want to say in the last 45 seconds, go right ahead.
Yeah, just thanks again for having me on, Mac. It's always a pleasure talking to you. It's always fun, and I appreciate you giving me the time, and just really appreciate it. So thank you to you. And then also just anyone listening, check out SOVHorror.com, regardless if you want to, pick up any of our movies or not, check it out. There's interviews. There's all sorts of fun stuff on there, mini documentaries and 45 movies. So, lots of cool movies. We got a little bit of, something for everyone. So, whether you're in a body horror, slasher films, artistic horror, complete exploitation, I mean, we got it all. So definitely check out SOVHorror.com.
Okay, thanks a lot, Tony. It was great having you on the show, as always, and hopefully you'll come back for the third installment.
It'd be my pleasure, Matt. Thanks so much.
Okay, and again, thanks, and I have to go because we did go past the time, and I don't want anybody to get cut off in mid-sentence. So thanks again, and have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Thanks, Matt. Bye.
Bye.